securing bridges. Here we are, Alyssa Miller. We are at RSA Conference 2023. We are stronger together. That's the theme for this year. And we're happy to be here. I've got a great guest for you. You'll recognize her. She's been on the show before. You know, and hey, you know what? Honestly, we'd hope to have a panel for you, but things change. We're dynamic. It's live at RSA. Everything's changing every minute, and that's how we're going to approach this. So let's dive in. Glad to have you all here. Thanks for checking out the show. And with us today, it's Meryl Vernon.
Hello, Securing Bridges. Happy to be back. Thanks so much for having me back again. It's always wonderful to see you.
I figure if we can do, you know, a live stream, we might as well get a live recording.
We might as well do it.
So
that's where we shine.
So here we are.
We're good at this.
We're live, but on Memrex.
Yes.
At RSA. So by the time people see this,
it'll be after RSA,
else.
Yeah.
We'll be somewhere else.
Yeah.
We won't be here.
We'll be able to be in the comments because of that.
Of course.
We'll be there trolling the comments.
Do show up in the comments.
Please. Please come at me
in
the comments.
Here.
I love the engagement.
So, for those that didn't see the previous episode when we had you on, just tell folks a little bit about what you do. You wear a couple different hats.
Yeah, I do a lot of things out there in the industry. So professionally, I'm a red team operator and a purple team program manager. So I pioneer enterprise purple teams out there for cybersecurity, dealing in cyber resilience, you know, proactive, proven, driven resilience, rather than traditional models of offensive security. Additionally, I run a diversity podcast called the Cyber Queens Podcast with my co-hosts Erica Eakins and Amber DeVilbiss. And that's aimed at getting more women and LGBTQ minorities into cyber. And then I'm also the COO of Amber's nonprofit Teach Kids Tech, which is aimed at getting technology and its educational resource to children in underserved communities so that we have more of a technical workforce to pull from when they enter it.
So, were you at RSA?
Yes.
And you do a lot of different, you mentioned, I mean, we got some things you're doing within the community, some things you're doing, you know, obviously professionally for a day job, which I think we all kind of have to have.
Yeah.
What does Stronger Together mean to you? Like, as you've been, I think this is your first RSA, right?
It is my first RSA. I swore forever I would never come, because I was like, you know, that's, I go to hacker conferences, right? But it's been a great experience. I've loved it. Every day is better than the last, which I didn't think was possible, hanging out with all the vendors and stuff, but it's been wonderful.
Cool. So what is it, when you see Stronger Together, what does that say to you?
Yeah.
There's a lot of topics going on here. I mean, we're talking about AI, we're talking about endpoint.
It's the XDR. Whole spectrum, threat modeling. I see purple teaming in there. We've got, you know, exploits and stuff. It's crazy.
So when you see that theme, how does that link to what you're seeing here?
I think the core theme, I was on a backdoors and breaches panel yesterday, which is an incident response game you can play, and we had a panel of us, you know, cyber experts up there, and we all would have approached the incident differently. We all wanted to investigate different things for different reasons, like things we would look for in the logs and stuff, and it's just one of those things that goes to show, like, the reason cyber benefits and innovates and how we push it forward is diversity of thought, like different approaches. Like,
right.
You know, my journey, because I came into cyber cold 4 years ago, from completely non-technical background, I approach things very differently than someone who's been in tech for like 12 years. And it's when we come together and idea share and discuss and innovate that we make cyber better.
So you've kind of got like an interesting juxtaposition almost of, you know, the different hats that you're wearing. Now, on one hand, you're doing this, you know, kind of, you mentioned more like the red team and very obviously technical focused in terms of like really down and dirty into the weeds.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
On the other hand, you're COO.
Yes.
So you're also sitting in an executive position.
Mm-hmm.
How does that, when you come here and you see, you know, maybe a conference that is a little more targeted, kind of that latter persona, I guess. How does that kind of meld for you now, because you've got kind of both those sides to what you're working through?
Yeah, you know, when people do ask me, what do you do? It's like, do I talk about Teach Kids Tech or do I talk about my day job, which is obviously the thing that, you know, is one of my passions. But every single thing I'm involved in aligns with itself one way or another. Purple teaming is all about collaborative security. It's all about getting teams talking to each other that would normally be siloed from each other. And then you have, you know, we have a diversity problem in cyber. We have a workforce shortage. So I'm like, how do I address that problem? You know, I mid-career pivoted, but I think a lot of the people who are going to do that already have. So we looked to Gen Z. We're like, let's get more of them in here. And then we're looking to Alpha, and we're like, let's get more of them in here. So we just want to inspire as many people to try and be here as possible. And we're like, you know, it's hard. It's a hard industry to learn and to make it in and to stay in. Like, but when you try and we fail, we're learning. And when we try together, like, there are people to help, and that's that's how it all gets better. So
do you find like new topics that are coming up? Like obviously here this week, as you would expect, ChatGPT, generative AI.
Oh yeah. AI driven this, AI driven that.
All the language models. It's all getting talked about everywhere, right?
Yes.
Does that help when there's something like kind of a hot topic like ChatGPT and it's getting all that press? Does that help in terms of like the people you're working with who you're trying to bring into the industry? Do you see that kind of energizes them or brings a new energy or a new perspective on things?
Yeah, you know, it does, because all of a sudden, so from my marketing days, from my former life, I'm still involved with a lot of marketing people and social media managers and stuff, and all of a sudden they're all AI experts. They're all like, if you're not using ChatGPT, here's what it is. Here's how AI works and machine learning. I'm like, you know the term machine learning? Like, because most non-industry people say AI.
Right.
So they're all like, if you're not out there using this, it's applicable to you. It's applicable to everybody. Medical wants to implement it. Finance, stock trading is going to be a thing soon. You know, there's certain verticals in cyber that will be mostly automated by AI probably in the next 3 years. So we're seeing it everywhere, and everyone's worried, like, is my job going to be phased out? And it's like, it's again about cyber is still a human industry. You still need humans to do analysis and synthesizing and liaising and explaining and narratives and stuff. But all of a sudden, everyone is taking an interest in cyber, and they're coming to me like, what are the ethics? Are you worried? Do you talk to it? Does it learn about you? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's like having Instagram. If you have an Instagram, your data's out on the internet, and you're probably not managing it very well, so I have to educate people on that all the time. But AI is the same, and it's got people looking at their lives with a cyber lens, which is great, the average person.
Right, so
yeah.
How does that translate now into like a corporate environment? So,
oh.
You know, you're working with these, you know, people are excited to come to you, but what about the people who aren't necessarily coming to you, who are now, you know, maybe it's CISOs even, who still aren't really seeing that they need to address this, or maybe it's product people. How does that translate in the corporate space?
I think it's one of those things where we're not giving it enough consideration. Like you said something earlier that was really powerful. You like, we got ahead of this. We have a policy. We, you know, acceptable use policies, InfoSec policies. These are the things that determine
that
how we-
That was before the show started, by the way.
how we govern ourselves. And I'm like, if you're not addressing, like when encryption came out and when certain things came out, like everyone was very reactive in getting a standard around it and defining how they do it. And I'm like, you need to look to AI now and determine how that's going to look for your org and how you're going to govern it and how you're going to implement it and how your people are going to be adhering to its use, both personally and professionally. So we're going to see a lot of, I think, AI governance talks next year.
What about the legalities? Have you seen anything? I don't know how much research you've done into it so far, but like I'm looking at, you know, the EU, for instance, is really talking it up, and like they were already way down the road on some AI regulations.
Good.
But on the flip side, you got people in, you know, private industry here in the US who signed an open letter saying we should stop all development on AI. So when you hear that kind of thing, I mean, how does that now, you know, as you sit here and you're working with potentially, you know, people who are really excited to dig into this, does that give a different lens to kind of how you talk about it? Or where do you feel that we sit with that?
Like talking about like with the average bear versus like people like us.
Yeah.
You know, I
people
tell them.
Like us.
Yeah,
I love
people
that.
Like us.
Us crazy security people
are
just bizarre.
The no people.
No. We don't say no.
In fact, like I am not one of those people who is like, I think people fear things they don't understand. And it's like one of those things where like, when they want to learn about cyber and get into here, they're like, where do I start? What do I Google? What, I don't even know what to ask. And I'm like, you know, when it comes to AI, they're just freaked out for no good reason. Like when WhatsApp's T's and C's changed and it was all metadata, but everyone started freaking out that their actual data was being read and consumed by, I'm like, no. You read that wrong. You need to understand your own data governance. I definitely, you know, I don't market through fear, uncertainty, and doubt. We don't do that. I try to take a very proactive, it's great. It's an innovative tool. It's interesting. You know, interact with it, but do it smartly. Like 12-year-olds can spin up EC2 instances in the cloud, but that's going to start racking up charges, and it's very scary. It's scary easy. So I'm like, do things intelligently. Have a strategy in mind when you want to explore that. But I love that they're all taking an interest. I hope we see more machine learning engineers.
Awesome. So, yeah, and I mean, I look at it and I think, you know, we mentioned kind of that people element, right? And
yeah.
I think with AI, you mentioned before, we were talking before the show about, you know, kind of the approach my organization has taken. And I think it's the thing, we highlight like three things I think are really important. It's one, I mean, it actually comes down to the same people, process, technology, right? Mm-hmm. From a process perspective, it's like you got to have a policy. You got to set something. You need to understand what are the potential regulations that could be coming, what's already there that's going to impact you. But then you got to think about the technology. And, you know, yeah, we put in initially blocks from the corporate environment. We don't want people accidentally exposing stuff to ChatGPT. But then that highlighted the last piece. Because it's like, okay, we're going to stop people with technology from doing this. We're going to, you know, maybe build some secure architectures and things. But the real issue there is we've got to educate the people on how
to use it,
what the dangers are even, right?
Yes.
Because, you know, to your point, how do you understand that, okay, you know, sorry to certain organizations that are now in the news about this because their developers did it, but hey, I'm going to upload all of our code to ChatGPT because I want it to write my code comments.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah,
we need to get
check my syntax, sanitize my code. And I'm like, yeah, but when you're doing that, like source code is still proprietary information. Like it's classified or sensitive information depending on what org you work for. Like people need to realize that that is not a controlled thing. We don't have enterprise controls on top of that. It's open AI. Chat.openai. Open AI. Open out there. And so
that
a lot
just
of people,
means it's open source. It's more secure, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. And the license is free. Free is good. Open source licenses forever.
It's not free. Trust me.
It's not. Nothing is free. Nothing is free. But you're right. It's like you know, you there's a secure way to go about it. And almost everything on that floor today, on that expo floor, is AI driven. And everything next gen now is AI driven behavioral analytics, AI driven EDR solutions, AI driven, you know, workflow automations. Even like the AI will be like, hey, I recognize you do this a lot. You don't have a workflow. Want me to build a workflow where every time someone books a podcast with you, it kicks off all these emails and books all these things.
Could you write that, please?
I could totally write that bot for you. Absolutely.
That'd be amazing.
I'm gonna start doing it.
Just tell ChatGPT to write it.
Yeah, right? Hey, ChatGPT, Ellis needs something. But I mean, you know, it's one of those things where that's not sensitive information, but like everything is going to be, AI is going to be integrated into our environment when we consume these vendor products. So it's coming whether you choose to address it or not.
Well, I think for a lot of businesses, it's becoming transformative, right? You mentioned healthcare before.
Yeah.
And when we think about healthcare and how AI, I know, you know, even a few years ago already, I was reading some research that was being done with machine learning and the same generative adversarial networks, that's it, that we use for deep fakes, we're also being leveraged to look at, you know, medical imaging.
Mm-hmm.
And a year before a typical doctor visually would recognize a tumor, these things were picking out tumors.
Yeah.
So it becomes kind of that conversation of, all right, I see the business value. I know this is going to change your business completely, mm-hmm. so I want you to be able to adopt it.
Yes.
But we've got to do it in a secure fashion.
Right.
And I think that commentary is actually a little revolutionary for security people. Would you agree?
It is, because normally we want to test it first, right? We want to test it and vet it and validate it and push it out slowly. Never take the update the day it comes out and never do it all at the same time, right? Make sure that you don't need to roll back configuration management, change management. But I do think that that's why we need to start setting aside environments where we can test its implementation, because it will be transformative and we're all going to lean on it very, very soon. And then you'll be left behind or you'll be ahead of the curve.
And that's the key, right?
Yeah.
It's the left behind part that's going on right now, because you've got every business is rushing to implement this. And, you know, some may do it securely, some may not.
Right.
But if the ones who skip a step and jump right into it beat you to the market, that could be more damaging than even if, you know, you fail to implement it securely or something.
Right.
So when you look at that kind of problem, how do you kind of get ahead of that with those business folks then to say, hey, we've got to get in here, we want to make sure you get this going, but we want to make sure you do it in a way that's going to keep your customers' data safe, keep the company's IP safe in the case of a certain cell phone maker. So if you were to approach that, what would you recommend to the audience out here?
I would say to start making yourself an ally and having those conversations now. Go to the business units and don't make yourself like the mercurial, mysterious security person who's just like, we can't do that, that's not secure. We can't do that, that's not secure. Go in there and say, I want to meet you in the middle. I want to help you. Help me help you. Because you want it to work and I want it to be secure. And you're an expert in making it work and making money off it, and I'm an expert in securing it. The more we can fold that in, right, like continuous DevSecOps, the more we can bake things like that in, the less we will be reactionary to it, and we're getting those people thinking in a secure mindset, like trying to sew the security into the fabric of what they do for work every day. And, you know, collaborative security in general is kind of the future that OffSec is taking right now even. You know, we're not isolating red teams anymore. We're letting them hang out with the developers and the engineers and the architects and stuff. So I think it's, you know, it's if you can go to those people now and have that conversation now and say, I'm here to help, I'd like to get ahead of it with you. I'll help you define the work. I'll help you, I'll help take the work off your plate. That's big for them, take work off their plate, because they're inundated. You know, they'll lean on you and your expertise, and they'll let you do it your way, and you can find a nice in the middle.
And that's actually a really powerful message, right? I mean, when we talk about enabling the business and, you know, how do we enable a business? Well, it's bringing value like that. Hey,
yes,
we're going to make your life easier. We're going to help you expand into this new innovative technology, but also do it in a way that's secure.
Yeah.
But we're not holding you up.
We're not.
And so that's the thing I think has got to be top of mind for most CISOs these days.
Yeah.
But another thing that becomes very top of mind, of course, is the concept of staffing. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I know we've been in a kind of a state of flux right now. We've had a lot of movement in tech with
mass layoffs and inorganic growth.
And yet you still hear the conversations out here with, you know, business leaders, security leaders who are saying, I'm trying to fill this position. I can't find the right person, you know. So you work in an organization that's trying to help someone. Actually, you kind of work in two organizations that are kind of help that. So let's dig into that a little bit, because I want to understand a little bit more when we talk about Teach Tech in particular, what it is that, you know, how you guys see that mission and how that ties into that conversation.
Yeah, so when it comes to getting to, I think the reason we're having staffing issues, because CISOs are out here saying there's no one to hire, and everyone who needs a job is out here saying no one will give me a chance, no one will give me a job. I'm just going to say, take a chance on the person who wants to work in security and wants to help you secure, and let them just have a freaking shot. Let them just try. Your security is no worse off not having that position filled than letting someone new try it, so I just say
that's
try.
That's fair, that's a fair point.
You know, and then when it comes to getting to the children, you know, children are already out there, you know, playing Fortnite and playing Minecraft, and like they're on the internet with each other already. And when it comes to inspiring them to want to have technical jobs, you know, a lot of us start out with those goals, like those STEM oriented interests, biology and tech and stuff like that. And we have it talked out of us. Wow, that's really difficult. It's really hard to do that. Do you even understand it? We don't offer classes for that. When are you going to start in college? Like, you're going to graduate high school with no idea what you're doing. And, you know, we panic them right out of it into something a little more familiar and secure. So our research shows that if we don't inspire little girls specifically to want to work in tech or cyber by the fourth grade, we lose them.
Yeah.
It's a much harder sell later on. So if we can inspire them to think it's cool and innovative and fun, and that they can really unlock their own potential in life, then that's our goal. So we have proprietary curriculum we're developing for the elementary, middle, and high school divisions. We have workshops we're going to host that we hope to scale this year. So we're looking for corporate sponsorship partners. If you want to sponsor Teaching 100 Kids Technology, we would love it.
We're good with that.
We would appreciate it. And the children would too, mostly the children. You know, we're trying to solve our own workforce problem. I want you, when you're still a CISO 10 years from now, and you need people, I want you to have a pool of people to pull from who are capable, who love the industry, who have a passion for the subject, just like us. Because again, that's how we're going to push it forward. And these children wouldn't normally have access to this education because their schools don't have STEM programs, they don't have the funding, they don't have the teachers with the expertise to teach it to them. So that's the hole that we're trying to fill.
So what do you see as like the biggest challenge then that you guys are trying to overcome right now? So you've got this mission, which is great. You understand the studies. Where are you challenged at the moment to just kind of, whether it's connect with those kids, to bring them in, is it more about awareness? What are the big challenges that you guys face organizationally?
Organizationally, we have a lot of schools who are interested in partnering, but it's kind of like conducting a purple team exercise. I'm like, I need some of the blue teamers. They're like, well, they're all busy. We don't have time for that. I'm like, I know you don't have any time. You have to stop your actual job to help me with my exercise. But if you do that for a little bit, it will get a little easier when you go back. And we do that incrementally. So we're like, the teachers have so much they have to teach. More pressure on teachers to teach more. You still have the same length of school day. Kids' attention spans are all over the place. And we want to teach them cyber now. And they're like, great, who's doing that? And I'm like, we want to do it for you. But the other problem we have with the program is we can't just come in and do it one time, one day. We want to give them ongoing access to this and supportive resources to continue their education, continue access to practice and develop these skills, like continually. So we need a lot of buy-in from the schools. We need to be able to teach a teacher and have that teacher take over a computer lab and be willing to mentor a dozen kids at their school into more tech education. So we need it more ongoing, we need to scale. So we're defining all of that right now, but that's the major challenge we face.
So I've run into this a number of times that people, in fact, I was at the Scholars Dinner last night here at RSA.
Oh, that was fabulous.
Had a college student come up to me, and you know, he asked me, hey, I don't have any pen testing experience, but I really want to get into cybersecurity, right?
Yay!
So you have these people who, you know, how does that work? Because I think everybody always, we think of cybersecurity, a lot of, especially the lay person, if we will.
Yeah.
You know, they think of cybersecurity, the first place they go is they think of pen testing. They think of, you know, being a hacker, doing those things, which, okay, after my own heart,
I'm a hacker too, you know.
You know, but when you're trying to bring in like blue team concepts then for these kids, do you find that that's like is it a shock to them? Do they still, does your like waning interest, or does that, you know, spark their curiosity as well? What do you see from them?
Oh no, it totally does, because they're still like playing cops and robbers, right? Like they're still like very polarizing. They categorize things, big versus small, old versus new, good versus bad. So I'll be like, I have a computer. Someone wants to steal it, and they're like, oh no. And I'm like, how do we protect it? They're like, hide it. I'm like, that's a good idea. We'll hide it under this desk. Did that protect it? No. What do we do? How would you save your computer? And they're like, put a fence around it. I'm like, yes, a firewall. We could put a firewall around our computer. And you know, these are very basic cons, not really
sure,
how it works logically, but we're getting them interested in like, oh yeah, that's mine. And how do I fend off the bad guy? And I want to be like Captain America for my computer. And you know, you teach them to be their own superhero for their own assets and data.
I really dig this. That is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
So what can someone like me, okay, maybe I don't have corporate dollars to sponsor you right now, but
that's okay.
Are there other things that people can do to kind of help that mission? Because you know, I think this is another challenge that we see with staffing is no one wants to be the one to put money or time or effort into building that pipeline unless they know it's immediately going to have a return for them.
Right.
And this is definitely an investment in the future, right? This
is
not, hey, I'm going to do this thing and now I'm going to have, you know, 30% more candidates that apply to my job.
My 8-year-olds will not be hireable the same day, sadly. But
so what are other things that people can do to kind of be a part of this, even if maybe they're not in a position to bring an organization on board to you know, fund it?
Yeah, if not, you know, visibility is very key for us right now. We get more corporate partners, the more people are aware of the mission. And I, as many conversations as I have at RSA, I can't do it myself. We can't evangelize it ourselves. So, you know, sharing, liking, subscribing content, getting the mission out there, sharing it with people who you think might find it aligning with their goals, organizational goals and interests, that's absolutely free and the best way you can support us. But also, if you want to get involved, we need program coordinators. We need people to come in and help us execute these workshops and develop this content, and you know, graphic designers. We need tons of actual hands-on help. So if you have, you know, volunteer hour quotas, if you just want to give back to the next gen, if you just want to feel good about yourself, teach some kids, we are happy to have you and we have a job for you. Please contact me directly on LinkedIn.
There you go. So make sure the show notes include Meryl's contact information too.
But yeah, that's how you can help. Yeah.
Awesome. So looking now, okay, we're day three of RSA.
Right.
And you've seen, I'm sure, lots of things. We talked about a lot that, you know, we saw down in the vendor halls and the talks and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
This is your first experience.
Yes.
What are you taking with you out of this year being here? What's valuable to you that you want to take back to your org and be like, hey, here's something I got from RSA, whether it's your day job or your nonprofit?
You know, it's all about the people, right? We're stronger together. The connections and genuine friendships I have made here, the online friendships that I've had for years that I get to validate in person and things like this, not unlike us.
You know how that goes.
Yes. You know, it results in tangible outcomes. It results in things that you can point back to and say, like, we're going to partner on this, we're going to collaborate on that, we're going to develop this together, we're going to release this, we're going to release a new way of thinking, and we're both going to purport it, and we're going to try and change the way people think. And you know, George Orchiles and I started doing that, and now instead of pen testing, red teaming, purple teaming, we're like, move purple teaming earlier. Start doing it before your sophisticated adversarial emulation and give your blue side a better chance. So we're trying to flip that thinking, and it's working. It's very slowly, but it's working.
Sure.
So that's the kind of stuff that comes out of the relationships that you get. You know, you get more opportunities for visibility to collaborate on projects that wouldn't normally be in my purview, such as, you know, being involved in Teach Kids Tech came from LinkedIn because I'm a hacker and, you know, not anyone thinks that I want to be involved in charity teaching children, but I really do. So it's one of those things where, you know, I attended, I identified early, I went through the full agenda and I was like, these are the only three sessions that I absolutely have to see. And everything else is recorded that I can see that I wanted, that I didn't get to make it to. But, you know, you take that knowledge and you put it back in. When I'm on the expo floor, I'm like, give me your pitch. Tell me how you'd solve a problem. Tell me how you take work off my plate and let me do more with my human brain. And I am developing in my head this perfect suite of products that if someone gave me a budget one day and said, how would you build it perfectly? I'm like, ooh, I know exactly what I would buy. And I would go to you and you and you and sprinkle a little bit of that on top. And
so let's talk about that. Now, I know, yes. I said we weren't going to talk about vendors because I don't want
to keep it agnostic.
Anyone who saw the episode with Chris Roberts knows we got pretty deep into, you know, bad vendor habits. But I don't want to blast vendors. But I want to actually highlight what you were just describing and dig into that a little bit more. So what are the things that make you, when you go to a vendor and you say that, you say, hey, what's the problem you're solving? What are you looking for in the response? Or what's the type of response or the thing that they can say that's going to put them on that list for you?
Right. If they start immediately listing features or listing their integrations or listing their customers, I kind of tune out.
Okay.
You know, I'm like, that's not what I asked. I was like, what I asked for was the impact. Just like with red teaming, give me the impact. How does this, give me in what you do in a sentence. In a sentence, we take all the minutia of monitoring all your Slack channels off your plate for you and give you a daily digest. You can respond to only the things you need to respond. I'm like, okay, that saves me like 2 hours.
Sure.
Great. You know, so I look for the solution you present. I want to know, I'm like, this is my goal. I work in this. I need cyber resilience. I need to prove this. I need a tool that does this. Tell me how you do that. They go, we can do all that and we can do this and we can make it look pretty and we'll email it out for you. I'm like, beautiful, less work for me. I'm not a bottleneck now. I can depend on you for that. And then I'll ask them, you know, harder questions about integrations and, you know, data security and protocols and stuff like that. But I want to know the impact immediately. How are you going to change my life today? If I go back and say, we're going to spend $12,000 on this, what is my $12,000 getting me?
So what about as you're walking through the hall? I mean, what even draws you into a particular vendor to even go have that discussion? There's what, a couple thousand vendors down there. I'm sure you're probably not going to go to every single vendor and have this conversation.
Nope.
So what you know, what is it about a vendor's display or something like that that you see that calls you in to say, I'm going to go talk to these folks. They're interesting to me.
Right. You know, we all have like the brands that we all prefer. So I went to a lot of their booths because I've never gotten to work with their product. I'm like, I've never gotten to see your products. I could never buy it. So let me see it. Let me play with it. And then now I'm a believer even more. And now hopefully I'll get it one day. But when I see a booth, honestly, I just look at the people. Are the people there engaged? Are the people there believing in what they're selling? Or are they like, hi, do you want to like come check it out? And I'm like, would you want to come check it out? Like, I don't know. But if they're engaged, if they're like, what do you do? If they're asking me questions about myself, because people love to talk about themselves. They're like, what problem are you trying to solve right now? I'm like, oh my God, I'm trying to solve this problem. I'm like, okay, that's your solution? Or we can try and help. Or we don't address that, but blah, blah. And I'm like, wow, you're so knowledgeable about, you know. And when I ask, I'm like, who's your direct competitor if you have one? I want to see what you say. And I want to see how, if you know how you compare and what makes you different. I'm always looking for the what makes you different angle. So
okay.
I'd have to say that's what sucks me in.
So something that makes them either speak to a problem or shows how they're kind of different from their space. Because yeah, I mean, and the reason I ask this is I've worked that side, right? Mm-hmm. I worked for a vendor, I worked for a reseller. I've been that person standing out in front of that booth. And it is a hard job.
It is.
Because you're trying to connect to these people who are walking by. There's just a sea
so
of faces.
So much to do. Yeah.
A sea of faces.
You're like, can I bug you? Can I stop you? Can I?
Right. And you're trying to figure out, well, how do I broach this conversation? And I think, honestly, you know, for me, when I walk through, that's one of the things I'm looking for, is someone who can actually, you know,
engage
find
with
a
you.
Way to make that first engagement.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I know that that's a tough call. It's a hard thing to do. But, you know, if I stop and I look at your booth and I'm reading something, hi, do you understand what it is that we do? Or, you know, can I answer any questions for you? Mm-hmm. Or, hey, can you tell me about, like you were saying, can you tell me a little bit about the problems you're facing regarding, you know, XYZ buzzword thing that we do?
Yeah.
Right? I feel like that's a little bit more of a connection. Is that kind of what you're seeing?
Yeah, I'm there's like a two-pronged approach. There's like, I'm interested in sneak. I've never heard of, like, what is this? But everyone's talking about it. Like, I want to come. Okay, can I answer questions? Can I tell you more? That's the your product brought me here approach. But you stop me cold on the floor, you're like, oh my gosh, I love your nails. That'll work every time. You're like, and then we become quickie best friends about bonding over nails or something. And I'm like, so tell me what you do. What do you guys do? You're like, oh, do you want to hear about the product too? But they're just focused on making a connection, not necessarily selling the product. I always say 90% of business happens when you're not talking about business. Like,
yeah. So, oh, absolutely.
And so that's what I think the strategy should
be. Because, yeah, I mean, now to be fair, you will also get those people who are like me yesterday. Literally walked into a vendor's booth and said, can you please save me from your competitor? Which, to me, I thought would be gold.
Yes.
Right? Like, isn't that like, as a
you're
vendor,
you're willing. I would think, you're here. You have a problem. We can solve it.
You would like us to unseat our competitor.
Absolutely.
Boy, that's a tough job.
Yeah.
And yet, the response I got back was surprisingly lukewarm. Like, there wasn't that reaction like, oh my God, yes, let's get you, you know, let's talk more about who you are, what you do, whatever. It was... So I this is why I think it's important we discuss this. I want the people down there, they're there, they help us as leaders. Like, you know, as a CISO, I look at them, you know, we love to pick on vendors, we love to hate on vendors, but at the
same
time.
But we need you, we need the vendors.
Yeah, I need them. So I want them to do better. I want them to know better how to communicate with me. So if there's one thing you could change down in that space, now this is as close as we're gonna get to bashing vendors. We're not gonna bash vendors, I don't do that here. But what is one thing you would tell them kind of universally, you need to do this different to draw people, or at least me, Merrill Vernon, into...
Yeah. I would say don't lead with the how, lead with the why. And I would say talk to me like a person, don't talk to me like a quota you have to fill. Like when people on this floor, which is mostly salespeople, find out I'm an architect, they're like, oh wow, we've got one of the engineers is here. Let's all sick on her and like get her in. And I'm like, you know, I know what my needs are, but I want to know if you know what my needs are and if you can intelligently address that need.
That's actually, yeah.
So
I think that, and that's, you touched on another point I think that's really important, is not assuming by someone's persona, or even maybe assuming what their persona is, what kind of conversation it is that they want to have.
Yeah.
I had the opposite experience yesterday. I went to another booth and it was one where it was literally this situation where, you know, something caught my eye. I'm like, okay, I want to read about this. And I start talking to, you know, the one salesperson, very astute, right away stops me and he says, you know, hey, you know, can I tell you a little bit more about what it is that we do and how we can address XYZ problem for you? I'm like, yeah, actually, I'm kind of curious. Tell me about it. And we start talking. And, you know, I think very quickly he asked, what do I do? And I said, I'm a CISO. And, you know, and he goes in this very high-level conversation. And I start digging into, like, really technical details.
Yeah.
How does this thing work?
Yeah.
How does it do this discovery you say it does? What's it based on? And suddenly,
just because you're in the C-suite doesn't mean you don't know how to, like, ask these questions and put value on these details.
Well, what happened was I saw the panic in his face.
Oh.
And his coworker who's standing there, she steps up and she starts talking all the tech. Like, right away, she's like, yeah, boom, 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 this is how it does it. You know, we use a combination of these different feeds and, you know, we're going to go do these things. And we actually brought in this other product that we acquired and we tied that in. And it's like, yeah, I think, you know, to have that, just understand, let the person you're talking to kind of drive that conversation, I think is really important too.
Yeah, it really is. Because you never know what someone is looking for. By the way, when I go into a pitch or a demo, I'm like, automatically, just put me with the SE. Give me the technical person, because I have a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe marketing speak anyway. I'm like, I want to see it. I want to see the weeds of the product. I want to see it at its core. And then I will decide if it's got what I need. But the number one thing I'll say about vendors and RSA is that your work does not end at RSA. What makes a great vendor to me is the follow-up. Like, oh, yes. Yesterday we were campaigning, but today you voted for us and we got the sale, so we don't care. I'm like, I want the same level of attention and engagement that you used on that floor to suck me in all the way through my integration and spinning up my product and making sure I'm happy with how it's performing. If you drop me like a hot rock the next day, I will pull out of that so fast.
The phrase that I uttered for the first time, and I thought I was really smart because I thought I made it up, and now I found out that everybody knows it already, but that describes what you're talking about, is be a partner, not a vendor, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, and I had this exact conversation with a vendor that I'm actively engaged with. I said, look, you're just a vendor to me. You're not a partner to me. And that's why this is a problem. Mm-hmm. I don't have time for vendors. I need partners who are invested in my success, who understand that if I'm successful, I'm probably going to buy more licenses of your product.
Yeah.
And I'm probably going to expand where I use your product within my environment.
But you need to be as invested in my data as I am. Be like, we want to secure that just as bad as you want to secure that. I'm like, yes, help me. Thank you.
And that's the success,
yeah,
right?
That's customer success right there.
I need you there with me every step of the way.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's where I think there's, you know, if I could get folks downstairs to understand one thing, it's the value of establishing that type of partnership relationship. I know you got a quota, you got to sell stuff at the end of the day.
Right.
But you're more likely to get my money if you're not pushing me to sign a deal tomorrow.
Yeah, instead, we work together on it. We work together on the solution. And don't just sell me everything you've got. Tell me what I actually need, and then I'll see if I want to expand, like you said. So like people are like, don't you run a podcast with two salespeople? I'm like, I do, but they're tolerable salespeople because they don't do that. They do these good people things and not all those bad vendor things.
So let's completely change gears one more time.
Okay, we're going to pivot.
We're going back to that first time at RSA thing again.
Okay.
You said you made a list.
I did.
What sessions?
What sessions? Okay, so there was one on threat modeling the cloud. Okay. There's another one on purple teaming the cloud. So when it comes to the cloud, like so cloud pivot and escalate is one of my specialties as a pen tester and a hacker. And you know, I'm always seeking for ways to like, how do you pen test the cloud? Do you need like AWS's permission? Do you, what are the strategies? What are the tools? So I'm always looking to make sure I'm staying up on my game in that area because I don't want to lose that niche that I have for myself. But you know, anyone who's making it more collaborative, making it purple, making it, you know, add threat hunting on top of it, add business risk on top of it, add selling it to the leaders on top of it. I want to know what they're saying and how they're doing it and like make sure that I'm implementing all those things because that's the number one function that I have at my job is liaising results and, you know, telling business leaders what we do on the technical side and giving it relevance to them. So it was all about those sessions for me and then some interactive workshops. I love getting my hands on stuff. I don't like just to hear it. I want to see it and touch it and feel it. So
cool.
So workshops do it for me.
What workshops did you go to? I mean, I know you did the backdoors and breaches. You helped out with our friends up there with that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was a gamification of like threat modeling in the cloud. Literally, it's like a backdoors and breaches style, like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's not an incident response game, but it's gamifying, literally understanding your cloud services and where they're vulnerable and possible ways to address that. And I'm like, this is what nobody understands. I now have an easy way to convey this to non-technical people. Beauty, I love that for me. I'm gonna take that and implement it immediately at work, and that's why RSA was beneficial.
Well, there we go.
See, there we go.
Come full circle. Well, as you're talking about this, I heard cloud, 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 cloud.
Cloud, 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 cloud.
As somebody who has a hideously hybrid environment, meaning about 50-50 split,
okay.
The work you do you run into that? Do you run into those scenarios where you're dealing with data centers still, or are you really just kind of more focused in cloud space at this point?
More focused in cloud space. I have a completely headless company that I work for. We are completely in the cloud. We're all cloud native, cloud based. We're all fully remote. Like we have no on-prem. We don't even have a premises anywhere. We have no premises to speak of. But I just find that people who have a hybrid environment, they have people who understand the network on-prem side really, really well. That's what they understand. Where they find difficulty is translating that into cloud architecture because they try and do the exact same things. And I'm like, you got to start over from square zero and build it up the way it's supposed to be built here. The topography is completely different, which is why you need cloud architects and people who can translate. If you want what you've got here, it's going to look different, but it will do the same function here. And then you need to understand what your attack surface is. A lot of people don't even implement proper identity and access management in the cloud because they don't know how. So even though the cloud is no longer new, it's still new for people who are implementing it for the first time.
Sure, who haven't had to go through a specific transformation maybe and now are just sort of starting to find use cases for it. Or...
but they have a next gen AI driven tool, now that's cloud based and now they got to be in the cloud.
Well done. you sounded like every vendor in the space down there, next gen AI, I love it. So, last question before we wrap things up. First RSA.
Yes.
Are you going to have a second?
Yes, I will be back. I'm coming back.
What's bringing you back?
I hope to speak next year.
Okay.
So RSA. but also, you know, there are certain people that I won't see at other cons that I go to throughout the year that I will only see at functions like this. Okay. But it's got me really interested in like InfoSec world and like more like leader and vendor driven conferences like this, because I'm interested to see what they're talking about, what's important to them, what are you looking at, what are you building to address the problems you think we have. I want to know what all that is.
Did we draw another hacker over to the dark side?
Yeah, probably.
That's what I'm kind of hearing.
I know, everyone's like, you want to leave hacking and go into organizational leadership? And I'm like, yes!
Because it's a blast!
Because it's great!
I love it.
And we need it. You don't want to do it, I got to do it. I'm happy to do it. so yes, I will definitely be back. The friendships and the swag that I've gotten here is amazing. So
yeah, but now you gotta get it all home.
I'm gonna drive.
Oh, well that's right. You live not
so far away. I don't live that far. Yeah. So our thing is decently convenient for me.
So this is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go get all my swag today. I'm gonna give it all to you.
I'll put it in my car.
You can drive it home.
I'll drive it home. That's perfect.
Perfect.
That's called process improvement right there, people.
Yes, problem solving.
We just tabletopped that.
Yeah, great.
High five.
Good job. Awesome. Well, Meryl, thanks so much. I know this was kind of a pivot from our original plans, but it worked out really well.
I think it was great.
It was a great conversation. And thank you to all of you who are watching. Appreciate it. If you couldn't be here at RSA this year, hopefully we'll see you here next year. And remember, check us out on Wednesdays right here on ITSP Magazine for our next episode of Securing Bridges. For now, take care from RSA. We'll see you later.
Bye.